afternoon, and welcome to We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And I don't know why we can't do that the same every week.
We could just pre-record that part.
We're here every week, and we all look at each other like, okay, who's going to go next? What a bunch of goofballs. So today, we have another serious topic that actually, and it's something that really needs to be dealt with because we're seeing all sorts of issues everywhere. And regardless of where you live, your county, your city, and maybe still your state are grappling with the marijuana issue. And all we hear is, you know, we've got to have it for, you know, medication and all this stuff. And then, you know, if you say anything about it, you're an old fogey or a hater or I don't know. I'm not sure what other bad things we are, but, you know, you're bad if you don't like it. And so we have Dr. Philip Drum on with us today to discuss this issue from, like, actually two. He's got an interesting, interesting perspective. He's got a personal connection with this. And his job, he is a, let's see here, hold on. He's been a pharmacist for 31 years, who's had a wide range of experiences from community pharmacy practice, residency in hospital pharmacy practice as a hospital-based oncology pharmacist. He's been in, you know, administration. He's been a clinical coordinator and later a regional manager. So he's done, like, a wide variety of things within the pharmacy business or industry, whichever way you look at it, and brings a really good scientific perspective and just a lot to be discussed with this whole thing. So, just wanted to let you know, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We've posted all sorts of good information for you. I'm still posting a couple of things, and all the information about our guest, and if you would like to contact him at all, you can shoot us an email, obviously, and you can find me at Aaron at WeThePeopleRadio.us or Bill at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
That's it.
Pretty simple. We try to keep it all very tidy for you. So, without further ado, anybody else? Did we forget anything?
No. Sounds like the plan.
I like the deer in the headlights response. I like it. So, Dr. Drum?
Yes.
Are you in there? Yeah, there you are. I could hear your, I don't know. The little sound that somebody's out there, but just wanted to make sure we had voice for you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on today.
Thanks for making the time. Sunday afternoon, you know, it's funny. Either people are available or they're not, but it's kind of a relaxed day, so we have time. We don't have to do the 2-minute interview cramming everything you know. So anything you'd like to tell folks before we kind of get on to this?
Well, I'm a different kind of pharmacist. I think most people, even my members of my own family, really don't understand what it is that I do. Right now, actually, I'm doing quality work for IVs and building drug libraries for inpatient and outpatient pharmacies and to be able to allow medications to be delivered accurately and safely. But as you mentioned, I was an oncology pharmacist. So I worked with AIDS patients and I worked with cancer patients. Because again, AIDS patients are immune compromised just like cancer patients are. And so I have a background in that area and understand, the use of FDA approved dronabinol, which is Delta 9 THC, which is the active component in marijuana. I've used that in patients and recommended it in patients, back in the 80s, in the 1980s. And that's how long, that drug's been around. So a lot of the information that is being espoused by the pot industry is really just absolute lies, and like to be able to point those out to folks and realize how badly they've been duped.
Because there is actual medication that derives from marijuana? Is that?
That's correct.
Okay.
And we've had it since 1985. It is the active, psychoactive component that the drug addicts are seeking from their marijuana. It's called Delta 9 THC or tetrahydrocannabinol. And it was synthetically created in the early 80s and used for the FDA approved indication for use, which is what the marijuana industry actually steals. They use the data from dronabinol to quote and promote their use in cancer patients for nausea and vomiting. It's actually the dronabinol work. It's not marijuana work. It's dronabinol, synthetic THC work. And also the use in AIDS patients to help them stimulate an appetite to eat. That was the dronabinol work, the synthetic THC, not the marijuana. So they actually steal and use the FDA-approved drug studies to show that their marijuana does this. Their marijuana contains over 60 other cannabinoids that cause a lot more other problems as well. They also contain other products such as CBD, which is a different product, which is under national evaluation at this point in time for use in seizures. So, again, we've once again used a component of the marijuana plant to evaluate its efficacy in patients. And, again, people can get CBD for free. So if you're foolish enough to go out and be buying this from the marijuana industry, which has no quality control, studies came out in which they looked at what they claimed they were selling, and their percentages of what they were claiming were in the products are incorrect because there's no quality control like for the pot industry like there is for the drugs being made by drug companies. They have the Food and Drug Administration looking down their backs to make sure that they are creating what they say they're creating. The pot industry has no such such factors. They're trying to build them now, but this has been how many years since we've had? 20 years? Since 1996?
Yeah, no kidding.
And prior to this, they never were testing their products. When they recently started testing the products in the state, they found like something 33 out of 35 products were unavailable for human consumption.
So the cannabinol is not a prescription drug?
Cannabidiol is a non-psychoactive cannabinoid. So you have those that affect the brain and cause hallucinations, and those that do not, even though they're a cannabinoid in structure. So they do not affect the brain to cause hallucinations. Yeah. And so that's the cannabidiol, CBD, also known as, the one that they put in Charlotte's Web, the one that they're using for these very rare pediatric seizures, in which in the studies that have come out thus far, a phase two study came out, showing that it's only 25% more active than placebo. Placebo rates were around 14 to 15%, and its effects were something around 39% effective. Because as we know, most people know that children that have seizures, as they get older, their seizures go away. And so that's why we see a placebo response, because as time's going on, the child's getting older, and yet their seizures are going away with just sugar pill, just the plain placebo, 15% of the time. So the reality is CBD is only working in 1 in 4 kids, but having 80 to 90% side effects in all the kids. And so that's the problem why it's having a hard time coming to market, is when you have a drug that has that many side effects, kind of is difficult to get it to market.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell me this, before we get into the story of your sister, where were you on marijuana before, you know, it was actually personally impacting your family? I'm assuming, well, because of your work, you...
I was on kind of on the fence of, like, if people are stupid enough to use this, but the reality was is I never thought it would get as big and gone as wild and have lack of controls. And definitely would be against it based on just that alone, let alone what happened to my family. You have to be aware that, again, we have the Food and Drug Administration. We're going back to the 1880s. The 1880s, where guys were selling, you know, the snake oil off the back of their rigs and saying that this will cure everything. What other medication do we have out there that cures everything? Like the claims coming from the pot industry that marijuana does. It's nonsensical. The only drug that I think that could come close is aspirin. And I don't give somebody a chunk of the willow tree and say, here, chew on this, there's your aspirin.
Well, it's kind of funny because I was just at a county hearing, you know, because the counties are grappling with this in states where it's legal, you know, it's turning into a bit of a train wreck. We have lots of problem with our public lands, with cartel growing. And so now, you know, states and counties are trying to figure out, well,
You know, should we actually permit commercial growing so that, you know, because their thing is, well, then you know where it came from and all, it's all tightly controlled, blah, blah, blah.
And that was the ruse that was sold in Colorado, which turned out to be a lie.
Sure. Well, the funny part is these guys, you know, I can't say an entire industry, but the ones I dealt with were not very smart. So they had one lady who was actually, you know, she's an attorney, so she looks at all the sides of the thing, and she was actually taking them seriously. You know, hey, these guys are, you know, really, they want to make a legit business. They've got a little logo. They wear special, you know, they wear little polo shirts. You know, these guys don't seem like your garden variety, you know, dope growers. And so she was like, well, you know, maybe we could do like a pilot project, right? So people were, nah, we don't want to do a pilot project. So before this thing comes in front of the Board of Supervisors, these guys that are supposedly the, you know, the gold standard for how you do this legally and correctly, I got busted by the sheriff for a giant commercial girl, and they all got arrested.
Yep. Yeah.
We have to take a really quick break before we continue on, but I just thought I'd throw that in there because, you know, that's what's happening. That's what people are saying. So when we come back, let's talk about Rosemary, because I didn't tell Bill any of this, so at least you'll have one active listener who does not know the story, and all of it is on the web. So please reference there. I know we're going to give you a ton of information today.
Around 1970.
Oh, so they started.
Diamond was, you know, exploring.
Is Neil Diamond a pothead?
Experimenting, yes. Yeah,
it's actually an anti-pot song if you listen to the whole thing.
Oh, I need to get out more. I'm here to be educated. Oh, my gosh. So we forgot to mention that just because the topics usually are frustrating and complicated, we kind of mess around with the music a little bit. Dr. Drum, so there will be periodic outbursts of silliness. Just to be, you know, just to be clear. All right, so
these are all stones.
I know, yeah, right. Highly unlikely, but okay. So can you start us off on what happened with Rosemary? Because honestly, from the sounds of it, this is not going to be this is something that's coming for a lot of other people, and they don't even know it yet.
Well, that's very true. In fact, since my sister was murdered, I've been investigating and looking into this. And sadly, to say, since Prop 64 was passed in the state of California, we can easily expect to see an increase in 40%. That's 40 in the number of driving fatalities due to marijuana. We're already at 20% of our driving fatalities are due to marijuana in California, and we can expect a 40% increase. That is what was seen in Washington and Colorado on average when they went from a medical marijuana state to a recreational marijuana state. My sister was the oldest. I have one of three kids. My dad was a Marine. He served in Korea and Vietnam. And Rosemary actually took the brunt of all of our moving around. We lived all on the West Coast, Hawaii and Seattle and San Diego and San Francisco, all over the places. My dad was stationed in multiple places during the 50s and 60s. And he retired in 68, and we went back to where we were living in the Central Valley, where my mom's family was from. And I was able to grow up there for 12 years going to school, but Rosemary was already halfway through that. And when she graduated, she was very interested in medicine, and she ended up becoming a nurse. And she got married to a person that worked in the boating industry, and they moved up to Seattle, Washington, where she lived throughout her life from 1980 on. And she was a nurse in critical care medicine in the ICU. She also worked in the emergency room later on. She actually even worked for an ambulance company where she was the person caring for people in the back of the ambulance. And then finally she was in quality at the end of her career. And so it's 5 years ago tomorrow. It will be the fifth anniversary of my sister's death. She was killed while driving to work, 6:20 in the morning, driving into Seattle, Washington, going to work at Virginia Mason Hospital, and she was hit head-on by a person under the influence of marijuana. He was driving down a center turn lane for 400 feet. The legally allowed distance is 300 feet. So he was in there for the entire length of a football field, plus the end zones, and even a little bit bigger than that, driving down the center turn lane, going 48 and 35. And at the last minute, the entire time, a car had been stopped attempting to make the legal left turn from that turn lane. He was driving right towards it for 400 feet. At the last second, he realized in his hallucinogenic effect that he was under with his marijuana that he was driving right towards a stopped vehicle. And at the last second, then realized, I need to get out of here, and he turned to his left instead of turning to the right and getting back in the lane he should have been in. Because, as he told the police officers, the car in front of him was going too slow for him. So this lie, this points out the lie of marijuana drivers drive slow. That's another falsehood. 30% of driving fatalities due to marijuana, the driver is speedy. 30%. Okay? Wow. So with alcohol, it's at the 40%, but it is high, and when you combine the two, it's even higher. It's about 50%, about 48% if you combine alcohol with marijuana. About 48% are driving or speeding in fatal cases. And so here he was at the last second turning to his left. Well, my sister had nowhere to go. She was coming in with the incoming traffic going into Seattle on a major thoroughfare, which ended up getting shut down for 8 hours that day. As a result of the crash, she hit my sister first, shoved her into the car. She tried moving to her right, as the guy in the center lane said that I felt this bump from the car to my left, and then I felt this huge shove, because that's when he hit Rosemary shoved into that center lane car. So he squeezed alongside of Rosemary and the other car that was there, stopped legally in that turn lane, and proceeded to lose his front wheels, catapulted, went down the street, tumbling, and caused an 8-car pileup. My sister's car engine, which was the Subaru, and which you can imagine every time I see those commercials on TV about Subaru, how great they are, she was in a Subaru and was killed, had the engine compartment shoved into her chest, broke her neck. They had to cut the roof of the car off to get her out. That when he tumbled down the road, he crawled out through the roof of his Jeep, and all he had was a broken fingernail. Meanwhile, there was another car of a woman who had a broken arm, busted out teeth. So she was the assault victim in the case, and again, an 8-car pileup. They took him down to the hospital, and the officers were evaluating him. Well, the people, the police, the medical personnel was evaluating him. They sent down a DRE, or drug recognition expert, to speak with him, who he proceeded to cross off all of the physical activities that one does during a DRE evaluation. So, as you guys are fully aware, when you have alcohol drivers, they do the 9-step walk and turn. Well, they didn't do that for him. They do the finger to nose. They didn't do that for him. They do the one-legged stand. He didn't do that for him. So all of the physical activities that one would have, he didn't do it. He was in a cervical collar. He was able to move. In fact, he walked out of the hospital at the end of the day. And so none of those activities were performed and were scratched out by the DRE officer. He was taking a pulse. It was rapid. He was taking a his blood pressure. It was elevated. He saw that his eyes were glassy and red. And he did show that he lacked convergence in his eye. That's where you hold your finger towards their nose. You bring it in. And some people call it crossing their eye. Well, a person in the influence of marijuana has a lack of convergence, meaning they can't hold their gaze to that centerline fingertip. What happens is that the marijuana, one of the components, one of the cannabinoids, weaken the muscle of the eye so it can't hold that pupil towards the middle. And what you'll see is you'll see the pupil bip out to the side for a quick second and it'll come back to midline. So that's called lack of convergence, which he had. He had a raspy voice, which is what marijuana smokers have. And so he had all these positive attributes and did no physical evaluations of him and proceeded to give an evaluation of not impaired.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And then at the end of their 12 steps, he has the blood drawn. And again, he doesn't know the results of the blood value, but it came back at 3.2, which was drawn 3 hours and 13 minutes after the event.
Is that a lot or a little?
So one thing you have to recognize is that marijuana, when smoked, clears the body very, very quickly. 80 to 90% is gone within an hour to 2 hours. 80 to 90% of the THC that they're looking for, because THC is fat-soluble. Blood is water-soluble. And so it's going into fat stores. One of your biggest fat stores in your body is your brain. And so marijuana, the Delta-9 THC is being sucked up into your brain to cause all those nice hallucinogenic effects. And within 5 to 15 minutes, you start seeing that when people are smoking. The blood levels go up typically to about 150 nanograms per ml. And within 2 hours, you're down to about 2 nanograms per ml. That's how quickly it drops, exponentially. Unlike alcohol, where alcohol is cleared at a set rate of 0.015% per hour. So we can back extrapolate and figure out what the alcohol level was at the time of the driving. We cannot do that with marijuana.
But even though it's
cleared... So that's why drawing blood levels for marijuana are semi-useless, because its clearance is so quick.
But even though you say that, for those of us that are really, really not medical people, that doesn't mean that they're not still affected by it. It just means it's not traceable.
Because it's in your brain.
Okay.
So what's in your blood doesn't necessitate what's in your brain with a large molecule that's fat soluble,
right,
like Delta-9 THC. Again, that is the psychotropic agent in THC. That's what we're looking at. And so it's not in the blood, but it's where? It's in your brain. It's in your fat stores in your body is where it goes to reside, and it slowly comes out. Now, what people get confused with and don't understand is people say, well, hey, I've heard of them being able to find marijuana in your blood system days later or weeks later. That's, number one, not marijuana. It is a metabolite, typically, of THC. Carboxy THC, in particular, is what they're looking for. It's a metabolite. So your body breaks down the THC and clears it from the body. Carboxy THC is not psychotropic. And so it will not have psychotropic effects. So even though it's found in the body days later, it's not having a psychotropic effect. And that's what typically your employers look for, is they look for that carboxy THC, and they can then find that 3-4, a week later, depending on how much the person's a smoker. If they're a chronic smoker, they've filled up all their fat stores, and they're going to chronically be releasing this for weeks. And that's what your employers look for, is they look for the carboxy THC, which is not psychotropic. It's the THC that's psychotropic.
So,
well, is there any way to take that level and back it up to tell how much they had smoked at a previous time? There's still no way to do it.
No, there's... So really what they're testing for, again, what I'd recommend, is THC. That's the psychotropic one. We should not be checking for the carboxy, but, that's what the Department of Transportation does look for, the metabolites. And that's what they use for airplane pilots, for interstate truck drivers,
yep,
your school bus drivers, your boat operators, your subway operators. They are being tested and looked for metabolites of THC.
And all that does is tell them that at some time in their recent past, they smoked marijuana.
Correct. And recent could be as recent as 3 weeks.
Right.
Oh. Hmm. Well, that's a toughie.
But reality is that they've done studies, and the THC effects are not just for 15 seconds.
Sure.
In fact, they've done it on pilots, and naive patients had them smoke marijuana, tested them 24 hours later on a simulator flight machine, and some guys missed the runways.
Hey.
And they said that their driving, their airplane piloting was so erratic, it was as if they were weaving down a roadway because they were constantly changing their wings and tail rudders and everything, that they would have a very hard time. So one of the things that I've learned through my studies is that typically somebody under the influence of marijuana and operating a heavy machinery is that they can only focus on one thing at a time. Again, very indicative of the guy that killed my sister. He was focusing on getting to work, driving down the road, passing cars. Not that he was driving right towards a stopped vehicle. When he woke up and realized he was driving towards a stopped vehicle, he turned to the left instead of to the right. And caused the mayhem that he caused.
So this claim that I'm so much more focused and I can do so much more when I smoke is all bunk.
Absolute lie.
Yeah.
They focus on one thing. So when Cheech and Chong drives 5 miles an hour,
yeah.
You know what they're focusing on? Their speedometer.
Yeah. That's true. We got to take a break.
Oh my gosh! So when we come back, there was a lot more to this case, and really is a very interesting indicator on why we're not hearing all this great information. Because I think people would have been less likely to vote for dopey propositions if they knew all of this. Be right back. Same again.
Yeah, didn't work out so good for him either.
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, welcome back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Got all the information about the show and our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm. Okay, so I had the sneak preview version last Wednesday when we spoke on the telephone. But tell folks about all the other stuff that went on with your sister's case, because that was shocking.
Okay, well, so again, as I mentioned, it'll be 5 years ago tomorrow. So she was murdered on July 17th of 2012. The big issue that, again, Rosemary was the only person in our family that lived up there in Washington. The rest of us all lived down here in California. And so we weren't really familiar with what was going on up there with regards to their marijuana initiative. We had no idea. This is their I-502 initiative, which allowed recreational marijuana in their state. So that was the big thing coming up that year. And so you have to understand that there were a lot of people behind that bill, including the DA's office that was being promised that, oh, all the crime rate's going to go away and you're not going to have to deal with marijuana anymore. The Seattle Police Department and other police departments up there, oh, the crime's going to go away and you're going to be able to focus your other times on other safety issues in the state and not have to deal with marijuana anymore. And even the judiciary, you're not going to be all plugged up and having to send people to jail anymore because marijuana is now going to be recreationalized and all that's just going to go away. Poof. Surprise, automatic. And all that was obviously all lies, as has been proven now for time in both Colorado and Washington. They're having increased crime rates, increased driving fatalities, increased black market. Everything that they said that would go away was absolute lie. They're all increasing. And so my brother gets called the next day about Rosemary and talks to the detective, and he mentions nothing about marijuana. When in reality, we find out later in the paperwork that the detective was standing right there when they uprighted his car. the murderer's car, and marijuana dispensary cards fell out right in front of him, right where the car was.
Wow.
And so they knew right away what they were dealing with. And again, they had also sent the DRE officer in. He had admitted to marijuana use 1 week before. And if that was the case, then he probably wouldn't have gone to work. He would have been so intoxicated and asleep. But the reality was he was still going to work. And so the reality was he was lying because he hadn't used the week before. He had used that morning. And so anyway, the detective knew right then and there on that day. Talked to my brother. My brother went up there the following week, took the contents of my sister's car back. And again, the detective never told him at all anything about marijuana. Nothing.
Oh, no kidding.
And so we end up finding out in September that from an insurance agent on the case, that marijuana was involved. And it's like, what? You know, and so we got a hold of tried to get a hold of the police department. They wouldn't call me back. As to why this was happening, why weren't we being kept abreast and informed as to what exactly had gone on in my sister's case? So I then contact the DA's office, who then throws up their hands and say, well, we don't know anything yet because we don't have the paperwork from the police department, so we don't know. And I said, well, if you need some help with marijuana, I can help you. And so get a hold of me and let me know what's going on. Well, turns out the paperwork never makes it over to the DA's office until October. I immediately put in a Freedom of Information Act request for all the documents from the police department, because now I started getting very wary as to what was going on up there. And now we're in October, late October, I'm aware that there's a marijuana initiative up there. And so I get the paperwork from the Freedom of Information Act, and then, they tried saying, oh, well, she's on vacation, and she'll get back to you sometime later in November. I got a hold of the person in charge, and I said, no, Freedom of Information Act in the state of Washington, you have to respond in 5 days. They said, well, we did. We told you it's going to take another month. And I said, well, no, that's not what's meant
not actually
by that bill. By that law. And so anyway, they get it to me. Again, thousands of papers. And so anyway, I start reading through it and start finding out reality land. And that blood was given consensually, and here's the blood level of 3.2, and that was drawn 3 hours and 13 minutes later. So I get a hold of the DA, who then tells me, well, I'm so busy, we're not gonna address this case until after Thanksgiving. Mind you, this was July 17th. So I'm looking things up, and I find out that, I then get called on November 5th, and I'm told, oh, I just filed charges against him today. You know what November 6th was? The day that they voted for marijuana in the state of Washington. We could not go to the media because they hadn't filed charges against the man. Didn't file charges until November 5th.
Oh, boy.
From a July 17th murder.
And was he out at that point?
Oh, absolutely. He walked out of the hospital. They never arrested him. No.
Right.
And so when they arraigned him, I saw what they had arraigned him for. He was arraigned, his bail was set at $100,000. And so I started researching and found out there was a single woman killed by an alcoholic driver in July whose bail was set at $250,000. And there was a single woman that was killed in August by an alcoholic driver, and that bail was set at $500,000. So I immediately emailed the DA and said, how come my sister's life is so cheap? Is it because marijuana was involved and the other two were alcohol? Of course, got no response from that. He was on probation at the time, seeing the judge, for beating his wife while under the influence of alcohol and marijuana, we later find out. And that judge allowed him to continue to use his marijuana, which he did, to kill my sister. And that we were told by the DA's office that, well, we're going to arrest him when he comes in to see that judge. Get an email later on that afternoon saying, well, man, by the time the sheriff got there, he had already left. So we didn't arrest him. So my 84-year-old mother asked me, don't they know where he lives? But no, they didn't go and arrest him. So when I go there for the arraignment, guess who's the face I see as I get off the elevator right in front of me on the courtroom floor? His. And he, of course, then comes in with little kids like 5 and 7 years old, sitting behind me. And if ever you want to get a picture of real justice in this land, please go to an arraignment. Please go to an arraignment and watch the rate of recidivism. It is sickening. It's like watching a merry-go-round that they tell you what his previous convictions were for, and now he's here for this. Previous convictions were for, and now he's here for this. And so we sat there for 2 hours. There was the media there. I told the DA I didn't want the media involved because now it was already after they had voted for their pot up there. And my sister had a house that we needed to sell, and there was no one living in it, and I didn't need her name out there in the media to say, oh, Rosemary Temple's house is up for sale. Well, it's out there, and nobody's living there. Go ahead and rob everything out of it.
Sure.
So they at least did it at the end of their session, so the media had already left when they were filming. So they didn't film the arraignment, in which the judge cut the bail in half right in front of me. So it wasn't. He wasn't a cheap $100,000. He was even a cheaper $50,000, so he could go home. So he went home. $50. I paid 10% of that. $5,000. He goes home.
And his
actually, I found out a really interesting thing at the arraignment. He was now working no longer for the sump pump company that he was working for before. He was now working for the state of Washington, a known drug dealer, drug addict. Was now building their rail system from the Seattle airport into town. That was his new job.
Wow, kind of can't make that up. And his
they
history.
They ended up not filing charges. The bottom line, the DA wanted just to file DUI, file reckless driving charges. They didn't feel they had enough case for the DUI. In fact, the DA on that day of the arraignment proceeds to tell me right to my face, well, his blood level wasn't a level of 5 or higher, therefore we can't charge him for marijuana. And I said, you're wrong. That was in I-502, that limit of 5. There was no limit on July 17th.
That's right.
Which is the law you have to go by, DA. And she also happened to not even read their own law, because Section 4B in their own law goes on to say if the blood's drawn after 2 hours, any THC level above 0.00 could be used as evidence that a person was under the influence or affected by marijuana. She didn't even know her own new law.
So obviously that.
So we had to hire a lawyer to convince the DA to file DUI charges against him. They did. I got a new DA, too. I said, I don't trust this woman. I want a new DA. And so get a new DA, come to court, pretrial hearing, which is very important, people. You need to go to your pretrial hearing because that's when a lot of the business gets done. Mm. And, in fact, the business that was done was we were given a judge that extended what the DA was requesting in other cases. So we were all thumbs up. That's who we want. We want a guy that the DA asks for 10 years, and he gives them 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we want. Because, again, my murderer had 42 court appearances in 49 years of life, including multiple DUIs for marijuana, even two within the same year in which he was supposed to have spent a year each. And they're so screwed up there in Washington that they didn't even put those two and two together, and he spent no time in jail. All of his 42 previous appearances were all plea bargained. All of them.
So he
including previously beating a girlfriend under the influence of marijuana, including a first felony for selling cocaine and marijuana to an undercover cop, plea bargained. His second felony for beating his wife, plea bargained. So this guy's spending no time in jail, and guess what he wanted from this case?
Probation.
A plea bargain.
Yeah.
And I told the DA, no chance in hell is he going to be getting a plea bargain in this case.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow.
So with the DUI charge, if he was convicted by the jury, he was looking at 19 years in jail, as compared to the reckless driving, which was 4.5 years.
Hmm.
So the judge that we get wasn't Hangham Harry. The defense kicked him out and said, no, we don't want him. So guess which judge I get for my sister's case?
Oops.
The judge that was seeing him for beating his wife, that wrote the writ that allowed him to use his marijuana.
Hmm.
She sat there and said, well, I don't know if I got a conflict of interest. I found out about this case while he was with me. I have to go find out if I have to recuse myself. That was on Monday. On Tuesday, she comes in, gavels in, and says, let's go. And immediately then starts attacking the DA, starts attacking and asking her own questions. Not the defense attorney. The judge was going after the police officers, the DRE, and the detective. So it became blatantly obvious that we had a hostile jurist on our hands.
Sure, sure.
And so we went to the DA and said, we want her kicked off, just like the defense attorney had her kicked. We want her kicked out. We want somebody else. Oh, no, no, no. She knows him. She knows how bad he is. I said, did you see what he's doing to your DA?
Who decided that they wanted to... Well, how about this? Let's take a really quick break here before it's the top of the hour. And besides that, I guess we probably should let our blood pressure go down a little bit. I can hear people out there in the world going, what?
Yeah, career criminal gets off.
And this is not an isolated case. Anyway, we're here with Dr. Philip Drum. We're talking about, really, this is a wake-up call on the marijuana thing. That's the only thing I could think to call this program today. You can find all of our information about our guests and topics and archives and all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Warm is a smile, but his heart is cold.
He'll sell you dope, for he loves only gold.
He'll turn you on, and he'll freak you out. He'll get you low and turn your mind inside out.
Let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio loud. I'm too alone to be proud. And you don't know how it feels. You don't know how it feels to be me.
And we're back. Okay, we've got like 5 minutes to the top of the hour when we will be unceremoniously dismissed by the news. So, and then we have you hostage for another hour, though, so we're not, you know, just to let people know, we're not going to have to try to wrap it up in 5 minutes. But, okay, so you have the bad judge. Who thought, when you were saying before, that they thought that, well, hey, this judge knows him, so she's going to be hard on him? Were those the people prosecuting the case that thought that was going to work out for them?
Yes.
Okay.
The DA.
Just checking.
Who initially, you know, immediately got slapped in the face. Like I said, she was all over them on Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday became a day that it was a judge's break. Friday they don't have court. And so she came back in on Monday and apologized for her actions. And then immediately, within 20 minutes later, she was back going right after the DA again. So, so let me just kind of back up a couple of things that I had to do my job in getting things done and prepared for case. Again, I told you about marijuana fell out of the card. Well, actually, out of the car. Actually, what the detective had registered it in as is green vegetable matter.
No, you're kidding.
And it wasn't until I got the new DA that I finally got the DA's office. This is King County, Washington, to actually test it. To determine that it was marijuana and Delta 9 THC content, I had to be tested and reported on by their crime lab, that it hadn't been tested for the entire year. Because I said, you're foolishly not going to be taking that green vegetable matter in the courtroom without testing it, are you? I said, you're not going to have the defense attorney tell everybody it's oregano, and you're going to be sitting there with your thumb up your butt going,
Yeah.
Not having tested it. They also one of the reasons the murderer gave was that his car was pulling him to the left. It was pulling him to the left, and he told the police officer that. And so you would think the police, and he admits, he says, I took my car in because it was pulling me to the left. So do you think that they'd find out about that? Nope. So on the year anniversary of my sister's death, I did a Carfax on the car. And I found out it was the Dodge Lithia Chrysler dealership is where he took it in. And he took it in for oil and lube a month before.
Wow.
And, of course, the police excuse was, well, we don't know where he took it in. He didn't tell us. I said, I did the Carfax. You owe me $35. Here you go. Why don't you go to the Dodge Lithia Chrysler dealer and find out who the mechanic is? You should have found this out, I don't know, a year ago?
Yeah, right.
So I was doing their job. Again, the judge then proceeds to throw out the marijuana blood evidence, the marijuana, his previous convictions for DUI, his previous drug convictions. Everything was thrown out. It was too prejudicial. The reason why the blood evidence was thrown out was because the DRE officer screwed up in that when he was filling out his paperwork, don't you think, where would you think in a consensual blood draw form, where do you think the consensual sign-off would be? Maybe near the top? No, it's at the bottom of their form. So the officer started filling out the top of the form, he said, which is the non-consensual blood draw portion. Didn't check off the box why he was taking his blood without his consent. There were three reasons. He didn't check off any of those boxes. But he had him fill out the bottom portion of the form, which was the consensual blood draw portion, which was completely filled out correctly.
Oh, my God. Okay, we'll have a longer blood pressure break here with a little news break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm. We are talking about the drama that we hope your family is never involved in that unfortunately consumed them. But he is a licensed pharmacist for the past 31 years, has a tremendous amount of information on what marijuana does and does not do. So we hope you will stick with us. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Hour 2 is next at KCNR Shasta, Reading.